I'm going to quote it to you first because it's how you know it and how I know it, whether it was the King James Version or most other English translations. And it's Proverbs 22, verse 6. Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he grows old, he'll not depart from it. And for many, we have held that out as a promise instead of a proverb. And so the question is what's the difference between a promise and a proverb? Well, a promise is just that. Somebody offers to us something, and if we receive the promise, then we can accept that it's going to be done for us. But a proverb's not a promise. And I know that may come surprising to many of you, but it's not a promise. It is general wisdom. It's a gnomic principle. Dogs bark. Have you ever met a dog that didn't bark, though? The dog that doesn't bark is the one you better watch out for, because he's the one that's going to bite you first, and then he'll bark, if he barks at all. But as a general principle, do dogs bark? Yes, dogs do bark, and cats meow. But do all cats meow? And the answer is no. And so we're looking at general principles. These aren't promises. They're general observations. It looks and says, over the course of time, and again, if you're not learning, I had one deacon in Dallas say this, if you don't learn from the mistakes of others, and you need to, you'll never live long enough to make them all yourself. Well, hopefully you'll live long enough that you don't make them because you have watched other people and you have seen the result of what they have done. Now, over the course of the 100-plus years that Central has been here, I can promise you that a lot of moms and dads had their children in Sunday school. And at some point or another, hoped that and expected that Sunday school was going to train them and going to the worship service was going to train them or going to training union or any of the missions programs, that was going to do the job for them. And when they got home, it's kind of nominalism. It really didn't matter. At home, they never saw their parents pray. They never heard their parents read the Bible. They never watched any kind of spiritual enterprise in the home because the parents were hoping that the kids would catch it when they were at church. And the fact is that parenting is not, it's not a casual enterprise. We just listened to the comedy a moment ago of all the things that the mother does, and she does much, and the father does as well. But the reality is that we can do all of those things and miss the most important one. And the greatest influence that we have with our children, and some it's past, some it's too late. The greatest influence that we can have with our children is for our children to see it in us. Not the fact that mom and dad drug me to church every Sunday and I had to do this and I had to do that, but rather that they saw on a consistent basis that it was important to mom and to dad. That they saw faith alive in them, and they saw it as not just something that you did on Sunday, and that we behave one way here when we're all dressed up and clean and looking pretty, and behave an entirely different way when we're out in the world. And so the reality is that when we read in this proverb, it is telling us that there is a process. And it begins with a command. It is a charge. And so we find that the parents from the very beginning are given a charge. So what's this word train? Well, it's odd that it would ever be translated that way because that's not what it means. When you look at the ways that it's used, the verb only occurs 5 times in the whole Bible. That's not much, is it? 5 times, and one of them's in Proverbs. So when you look at how it's used, well, we find 2 of them is used in the book of Numbers. And when Moses was given the picture of what the tabernacle was supposed to be, and then they made it, in the book of Numbers, we find that everything had to be anointed and prepared in order that it could be used in service. And so it's used up all the offerings and all the sacrifices that it required over this 8-day period of time in order that the altar could then be instituted into service. So there's a process that took all of the, even though it was constructed, it could not be used for the sacrificial system till it itself had been anointed and prepared for the service that God had it designed and created to do. and it's used of the silver cups and all the bowls and all the utensils and the 8-day process of anointing and sacrificing in order that they could be used in the service for which they were created. It's used one other time in Deuteronomy. In Deuteronomy, it talks about a man who has built a house. As a young married person, and they've gotten their first house, but they've not yet had a chance to dedicate the house, and the men are being called up to military service. And so the law in Deuteronomy exempts that man from having to go to military service, because if he goes to service and he dies, then he will not have the chance to dedicate his house. And so until he has dedicated his house to the Lord, then he is exempt from going to military service. Not an excuse not to go, but rather to show the importance that the house is dedicated to God. And the one only other time, it's used in Nehemiah. And in Nehemiah chapter 12, when they finish the wall, before it's finished, it's completed, but they dedicated it to the purpose and its function, and that was to protect the city from enemies. So when I look at these different usages, then I have to say and step back and draw back and say, there's something else here than just the idea of training. We've got to go through a process. Our kids are not ready for the world until you and I have invested what it's necessary over the course of time so that when they go out on their own, they're prepared for it. Ravi Zacharias is a Christian apologist from India, but he lives in a suburb of Atlanta. And Ravi Zacharias talks about the generation in which we have now. They're called the postmodern. And he says they listen with their eyes. Your eyes weren't meant for listening, were they? They listen with their eyes, and they think with their feelings. Now, that's something's all messed up there, isn't it? I'm supposed to listen with what? With my ears. I'm supposed to think with my mind. But all of a sudden now, the reasoning and rationale, and I'm not talking about high school kids, I'm talking about anyone that's 50 years and younger. Do not think, but feel. And do not listen, but watch. And if you don't read, you don't think. If you do not read, you do not think. If all you do is watch, then somebody else is telling you what it is that you need to think. There's also a sociologist who did a report, an investigation. I could give you the references, but I don't have them in my head at the moment. And in his references, he made a contrast talking about the way that the world has divided itself up. That 3/4 of the population of the world are people who are people of faith, and they stay to the same faith that their parents had, no matter what faith that is. So if you're born a Buddhist, you will remain a Buddhist. And if you were born a Hindu, you'll remain a Hindu. If you were born a Muslim, you'll remain a Muslim. If you're born into a Christian family, well, it doesn't work quite the same for Christians, because we're not born into Christianity. We're born again into Christianity. And so the loss is that we assume the same process. All you have to do to be a Muslim is to be born in a Muslim country from Muslim parents. And guess what? You're a Muslim or a Buddhist or a Hindu. But not so for a Christian. Just because your mom and dad or your grandmother and grandfather were Christians does not make you a Christian automatically or by any other form or fashion. You become Christian because the Spirit of God opens your heart to the gospel of Christ, and you receive it personally into your life and into your heart and choose that that's the way you're going to go. But maybe there in some place or another, we have assumed, like with all other religions, that our kids will do exactly the same thing as what we have done. And because we have been moral people, they will choose to be moral people, but they won't. Because our morality is too inconsistent for it to be enough of an influence to make them want to choose to go that way. One professor at the university in Seattle made the comment, because those of a more liberal persuasion have fewer children than those from conservative church groups and organizations. The reason is because of abortion. If you go to the Catholics, you go to Baptists, not most, but some Protestant denominations where abortion is aborted, then people will keep their babies, whether they were planned, whether they're out of marriage, whatever. They will keep their babies because they grow up in a culture that says that babies are valuable because God created them. But the university professor in Seattle makes the comment. He says, that's okay. We're okay with that. You have them. You raise them. But when they get to us, they are ours. And the question is why? And the answer is simple. Because we have taken parenting as a casual enterprise. And so we are to inaugurate our children into a path that they themselves have to choose. It's possessive. It says his way, not the way, his way. Personal pronoun is at the end of it. It's a life choice is a choice that an individual makes. Your mom and dad can't choose the path you're going to go. They can't set you on the path and say, okay, I want you to be an electrician because I was an electrician. I want you to sell insurance because I sell insurance. I want you to be an engineer because I'm an engineer. I want you to be a painter because I'm a painter. I want you to be a preacher because I'm a preacher. You cannot choose the path that one's going to take, can you? It will be theirs. And it'll be the path that they chose, and it's the path that is right for them. But in the course of it, going down that path, we have to set them off at the opening, at the very beginning. It says at the mouth of the way. Now, recently, I got a chance to watch again Dorothy, the red shoes and the golden, all right. And when she lands in Oz and she's trying to find her way to the Wizard of Oz, she asks a question, and, you know, how do I get there? And they say, well, you've got to start at the beginning. And so they find the beginning of the yellow brick road, and she, even though she's standing someplace in the course of it where she could have jumped on, they say, well, the best place to start is at the beginning, at the mouth, at the opening. And that's what this says. It says, at the opening of his way, when he first begins, you've got to have already dedicated him, already prepared him in such a way that he is ready for the choice that he chooses in the life that he's going to go. So I think about it in trying to find other references, other means by which to understand this. In Middle Hebrew, it means to rub the hand on the head. Now, I'm not exactly sure what that is. You know, patting the kid on the head, I guess that a boy. Encouraging them along the way, which would probably be quite appropriate, to give them encouragement, to encourage them. I hear parents say, I did not send my kids to church because my mom and dad made me go to church when I grew up, and I was going to let it be. Well, you know, how's that work for school? I didn't make my kids go to school because my mom and dad made me go to school when I was a kid, and I thought they ought to make their own choice. How's that work in life? I didn't make them get up and go get a job because, you know, my parents made me get up and go get a job when I got out of high school. How's that work? You're going to have an adult at home on the couch doing nothing. You got to kick them off in the right direction, don't you? You've got to give them encouragement to go the right direction. And so you've got to inaugurate it. In Arabic, it means to chew date palms and to take the juice and to put it on the gum of the baby. Now, I didn't do date palms. I did ice cream. The first food that any of my kids or grandkids tasted beyond milk was vanilla ice cream. I inaugurated them into the different food choices. And so today, my family loves ice cream. If we're going to have a get-together, the first question is going to be, Dad, are you making homemade ice cream? In fact, we not only inaugurated our kids into homemade ice cream, we inaugurated the whole neighborhood in Dallas to homemade ice cream. And so whenever Sadie posted on Facebook that we had homemade ice cream, she's got a few friends that she used to have as a child up in Dallas. They'll say, I want ice cream. Man, if your dad made your homemade, inaugurate them. Get them, encourage them into something that is right. Now, again, ice cream. My kids love ice cream. All of them. Kaylee, I mean, she'll give up food for two bowls of my homemade ice cream because she likes it that well. Well, our faith in Christ ought to be that dynamic and that real. That they see us and they are inaugurated in it, that your kids will accuse you of saying something like this, and I quote, "You're the most religious person I know. Because you don't just do this stuff at church, but you're doing it all the time. And I hear you talk about Christ in the grocery store, and you're always talking to people and everything you do, and you know, I don't know that I want to be that religious." Well, that's one way of defining it. But when's the last time one of your children or grandchildren told that to you? If they don't see it in your life, if they don't see the fire and the passion for serving God, inconsistency is death to it all. Do you understand that? Our inconsistencies are death to it all. Because if I'm inconsistent, and I'm just telling you, any and every one of us are at danger of our own inconsistencies, and our kids see it, and our grandkids see it. We can say it's important, but you know, when push comes to shove, they really know what is important, don't they? Is it the ball game? Is it the weekend at the camp? Or at the beach? Whether you have to be here or not, what's the most important thing to you on a Sunday? And your kids see it. And my kids see it. And you say, "Well, but you're the preacher." Well, I'm telling you, I hadn't always been the preacher. And my kids saw it when I wasn't the preacher. That we didn't miss. Simply to miss. And when we went on vacation, we went to church with Mom and Dad. Why? Because it's that important. Now, will they follow our example? Only they can do it. I can't make them. And you can't make yours either. But our inconsistencies have been the damage. You know, you hear damage control. It's been the damage, and there's no control to it because we have seen our kids walk away. Without pointing fingers, you just look at your children and grandchildren and ask yourself, where are they? And what are they doing today? Because that's the reality of it. And so if we don't start at the beginning, you know, I'm appreciative to see a consistency in Chris and Tori, and to see a consistency in Chad and Diana, to see a consistency in the young, the ones that have little kids, to see them pray and to see them lead out and see them involved. Why? Because that means that these kids are seeing something that is vital. Vital means life and life-giving. It's vital to them. And so we've got to start out here. If that child someplace down the road at 17, 18, 19, 20 is starting to make life choices, they're going to make them based upon what you've inaugurated them to, what you have acclimated them to, what you have prepared them to, because they're going to see it in you and they're going to want to follow. But the second half of this, it says, the English translation says, when they have grown old, but it's causative. How many of us get to grow old? And how many don't? Psalm 139, David says, "God, you know me, and that you have put my days in a book before even one of them was." Verse 16, Psalm 139, you can look it up. And so the reality is that our dash from birth until death is in the control of God. If we get to live to be an old age, it's because God allowed it. And if we don't, it's because God didn't. You do understand that. That's what causative means. That someone else is in control of it and not the person. We are not the subject of that verb. But God is. So when God allows us to get old, well, I just quoted to you from Ephesians chapter 6. When Paul tells the children, he says, "Honor your father and mother in the Lord." Why? Because it is the first promise with or first commandment with a promise, that you may live long in the land. So we dishonor our parents, our dash is short. If we disrespect life and the principles of life, our line may be short. And for reasons that we don't know and we have no control of, our dash may be shorter than what we would like it to be. So God's in control of this, and if God's in control of this, we don't know how long down that path that we have chosen it's going to be. It could be a day down that path, but it's still the path we've chosen. Or it could be a lifetime down that path, but it'll be the path that we have chosen for ourselves. So what are you going to do with it? If I don't know from today till tomorrow what my line's going to be, if I don't know that I'm going to live to be 59 years old, then what's my choice is going to be? Well, if I'm not living the way I want to, then I would have to say that I'm going to have to start making some changes today. But if I'm serving God and doing what God wants me to do, then I would say to myself, absolutely nothing. Because I know that today, if I die and I stand before God, then God will say to me, well done, my good and faithful servant. You have been faithful in these few things. I will put you over many. Enter into the kingdom of your Father, into your rest. So we've got to make some choices because it's our path. And no matter what the days are that God gives us, when we have grown old in them, when we have walked a long time, as George Peters says it, a long path in the same direction. Not turning over here for a while and over here. You've got to be careful when you're a preacher because I know things that you don't know. But when it gets bad and somebody comes to me and they say, oh, it's terrible, it's bad, and they start showing up. And they begin to pray, and then all of a sudden it gets good. They disappear again. Where do they go? And you call and go talk to them. Well, you know, I'm just really busy. And then it gets bad again, and they come. Oh, preacher, you got to pray for me. Oh, it's so terrible. And they start showing up again. And then they're off again. And back and forth. No, a long obedience in the same direction. And a consistent, when we grow old, and the idea of turning out of sight. Paul said it this way. He said, who cut in front of you? Who caused you to lose your stride? Hebrews chapter 12. You're running so well. Who has cut you off? You know, that's all it takes, doesn't it? I watched the Derby. I didn't know I was going to watch the Derby. I just happened to turn on ESPN, and all of a sudden I see the horses take off in the mud. And they're going in, and one horse looked like it was doing well, but somebody cut him in, and he slowed his stride, and he never did catch back up. Who cut in on you? Who has caused you to stop, to turn aside? And it's never used in a positive sense. That word, in all of its uses in the Old Testament, is never used in a positive sense. There are occasions that it means to bring a stench to one's nostrils. You ever think about that? Think about those words. When Jesus was giving the letters to the seven churches, when he got to Laodicea, he said, I would rather that you have been hot or you would have been cold. I'd rather you be so far out there that you're completely cold, or I'd rather you be hot, but because you're in the middle, it's nauseating, because that's what he said, you may grow up. And so inconsistencies, turning aside, those are not good patterns. But if we start them off on the path in the right direction, then by God's grace and by God's will, they will finish well. If we start them out well. I was given a package of reloaded 9mm shells. And I got invited to go to the shooting range, and this is about 5 years ago, and I'm not a bad shot. And so the target was 25 yards off, and so I'm shooting, and I am not hitting that target at all. And I'm so frustrated. I've shot probably 30 rounds, and I'm so frustrated with this gun, I'm ready to throw it away. I'm ready to have it crushed because it's so inconsistent. There's something wrong with this gun. And the guy that gave me the shells, he said, well, have you got any that are manufactured? And I said, yeah. He said, try those. Pow, pow. Right dead on the target. What was the problem? Well, when they were reloaded, they were probably off cocked a little bit. Something was wrong with the packing. And if it doesn't start out right from the beginning, from the barrel, it's not going to hit the target. I have no clue where those bullets went. But I'm not a bad shot. I've shot things at 200 yards easily, right where I wanted it to go. And the reality is if they don't start out of the barrel right, using that analogy, you don't know where they're going to end up. You don't have a clue where they're going to end up. But if you start them out right, that's the best guarantee you've got. If you start them out right, that's the best guarantee you've got. And the observations, when we look at our children, I mean, there's too many options out there, aren't there? And if we've not influenced them to be the greatest influence on their life, even when they're not at home, If we've not influenced them by our own consistency, by our own passion, by our own love, by our own persuasion towards Christ, that it's more than just a religious ritual, but it is our very soul and life. If we don't start them out that way, we will never get them back except by the grace of God when they have gone their own way. And so we look and we say, okay, well, what do we do with this? Well, I think first we have to take a warning. Those who have beginning early, y'all still have a chance, don't you? You've got a chance. What kind of a young man Jackson and Aiden are going to grow up to be, and then whatever the next one's on the way. You've got a chance to set the course and let them see the consistency in your life. For those whose kids are older, it's going to require for you to stop and step back and say, Lord, help me rededicate my life now. Not just for me, but for them. Help me rededicate the direction that I'm going so that my child can see that this really does matter. It's